Hello, this is Roman Gabriel, and you are listening to The Grueling Truth.
Welcome to The Grueling Truth CFL Legend Show. I'm your host, Mike Goodpaster, and our guest today on The Legend Show is inducted in 1995 to the Canadian Football League Hall of Fame, was the most outstanding player in 1980 and 81 for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Help me welcome to The Grueling Truth, Dieter Bruch.
Thank you, Mike. I'm glad to be here with you.
Well, it's an absolute honor to have you here. I wrote an article not too long ago about the top 20 quarterbacks in CFL history, or the top 10, and you were in my top 10. Have nothing but the utmost respect for you, and I think people forget how good a season you had with that Rams team in 1985. And I think you just got a bad rap from people that love Jeff Kemp.
That was a pretty strange year in a way. I got hurt. I signed with the Rams after the 84 season when I finished out my CFL career with Hamilton. And I worked out for like five teams. And the Rams were I worked out for Buffalo and Green Bay and Atlanta and Cleveland. And I got offers from Buffalo and Green Bay and, of course, the Rams. And I wanted to go with to a team that had a chance to win, because it was late in my career. I already played 11 years in the CFL. So I wanted to go to a team that had a chance, to win a championship. And the Rams, I thought, were that team. And, of course, playing on a grass field because I had some injuries and stuff before. So I wanted to play, in a good environment, and the Rams were that team, and we had a really outstanding. I think we had a great, defense that year. John Robinson told me and my agent Gil Scott that he wanted to open up the offense more and throw the ball a little more, and we never did that.
No, John Robinson didn't want to do that. You can watch his career at USC.
Yeah. We started off with a 7-0 record, 7-0 in a row, and we were winning. Now we were doing well offensively, but you just didn't have a chance to, throw the ball anywhere near like it was throwing in Canada. And we had a good team and got all over the championship game, only to lose to the Bears.
Yeah, but we're going to go ahead and we're going to go back to the beginning because, like I said, it's a CFL legend show, but I did want to get that out of the way. I still think you got a raw deal when you were up here by the media. I think that you were a lot better quarterback than what American fans are led to believe. So you want to tell us about when you first started playing football and who were some of your early influences?
Well, I started my first when I first started any organized football, went out to the 80-pound league when I was like, I think I was 12 years old. And the first practice, they put me – I wanted to play quarterback at that time. And they put me down in the first practice on all fours, and they had players doing drills and jumping over me. I don't think I ever got a chance to throw the football, so I said, that's enough of football. And I didn't really start again until I got to high school in the ninth grade, and I went out for the football team at that time. And I was the only ninth grader that didn't play in any of the games. and my older brother, he told me, he said, I know you're not going to keep playing. I think you might as well forget about it. And I said, well, I'm going to give it another go. And I went out for it again in the 10th grade. And I started out as a defensive back. And I really gave it my all. And I was pretty good. I was a good tackler and pretty good cover guy. But one of my friends told the coach that I could throw the football. And the next practice, they had me out there. I was on the B team at this time, not the varsity. And the coach had me throwing some passes to some of the receivers. And the very next week, I was a starting quarterback. I think I went in and threw three touchdown passes in the B team game, and they brought me up to the varsity. And that's how I kind of got started.
All right, and you ended up going to the University of Auburn. What led you to Auburn?
Well, to be honest with you, I was always a big Alabama fan. I was a big Joe Namath fan. I loved watching Joe, play and with the Jets, and of course when they won the championship against the Baltimore Colts, I think in what 69. But I really wanted to go to Alabama, and Bear Bryant was the head coach down there, and I was getting letters from Alabama, and this was all up until I hurt my knee in our spring game before my senior year at Jones Valley High School. And after I hurt my knee, I never heard anything else from Alabama. And I finally, I've got some offers from some other schools, and Auburn came in late and offered me their last scholarship. So I ended up signing with Auburn. I was one of, like, I think they signed 12 quarterbacks. Of course, they moved a lot of them to other positions, but that's how I ended up going to Auburn.
Now, you played there for the legendary coach Ralph Jordan. What was your relationship like with Coach Jordan?
Well, it was strange. I hardly ever, saw him. Now, the only time I really actually sat down and talked with him, I'd left Auburn midway through my third year there, and they kept trying to get me to come back, and my dad and I actually drove back to Auburn and sat down with Coach Jordan and told him I wanted to come back, but they wanted me to pay for I think the next two quarters, and at that time my dad couldn't do it, and so I ended up transferring to Jacksonville State.
Yeah, and it had to be frustrating for you playing behind Pat Sullivan, who won a Heisman Trophy. It had to be not everything that you were hoping it would be. So
yeah.
You go to Jacksonville State, and they're coached by Charlie Pell, one of his first
mm-hmm.
jobs. What kind of coach was Coach Pell to play for, and what do you remember about your college career at Jacksonville State?
Well, I want to go back to Auburn real quick for a second, but because I played as freshman couldn't play on the varsity at the time I was there, and so I played on the freshman team and played quite well. I think I was had five or six touchdown passes, and we had a 5-game season, and we were 4-1, and of course, like you said, playing behind Sullivan, I never really got an opportunity to play there, and that's why I ended up, having a transfer. And Charlie Pell and Clarky Mayfield was the offensive coordinator. They were really, really great people to play for and coaches. And, I enjoyed my time at Jacksonville State. I had a lot of guys that I played high school ball against that were playing there, so it was an easy transition for me to go from Auburn to Jacksonville State. And we had two pretty good seasons. I think our senior year, ended up 7-2, I think, or 7-8-2, and lost two games. One with a field goal at the last play of the game. I think Livingston beat us 17-16, and then we lost another game on a 2-point conversion, and I think we were one of the best teams in the nation at that time, and we didn't get a chance to go to the playoffs.
Yeah, and everything I read about you by doing a little bit of research off top of what I already knew was the arm strength. I mean, what do you attribute the arm strength to?
Well, I think a lot of it was just natural, but when I was growing up, my brother and I, we would throw the ball in the yard all the time, out in the street. And we always played. We played a little game where he was the hitter and I was the pitcher, and I would always consider myself as the fastest pitcher in baseball history. And I'd be throwing the ball and again throwing it as hard as I could, and we did that for hours. And I think just all the things that I did, throwing the football and throwing the baseball, helped develop my arm strength. And I got later, when I got into professional football, I got into doing some lifting that javelin throwers do, and that just conditioned my arm because at times I would have a sore arm from throwing so much. But when I got into doing some of the exercises I was doing that javelin throwers did, I never had a sore arm. I think that was after my first year in Winnipeg.
All right, now you ended up playing in the CFL, and from what I saw, you signed with the CFL before the NFL draft even came about. What was your reasons for that?
Well, back when I came out in '74, the what was it? The World Football League, I think, was starting up. Yeah, the World Football League was starting up, and I think they had a draft of, and they I think there were like 8 to 10 quarterbacks that they had drafted, and I wasn't one of them. And this was a time when, I mean, nowadays you would probably know if you're going to get drafted, but back then, all I would hear, nobody really told me anything other than some, there were some rumors that, I mean, I might go in the third round or something like that, but you just weren't sure, what was going to happen back then, like you would nowadays, pretty much. And so I, Bud Riley was the head coach at Winnipeg in '74 when I came out, and his brother was Hayden Riley at the University of Alabama. He was, I think, assistant athletic director, and he had told Bud about my, ability to as a quarterback, and Winnipeg. I didn't really know a whole lot about the CFL at all, but Bud came down and told me that they wanted to sign me, and I told him I'm going to wait to the NFL draft. I think it was about a month away or so. So he said okay, and then he calls back in about 3 or 4 days, and they upped the offer that they initially told me, and he told me I would be one of two quarterbacks that would, be the possibly be the backup to Don Jonas, who was the starter at the time, and I felt like that would be a good opportunity for me, at least a solid opportunity. I didn't know what was going to happen in the NFL, so I ended up signing with Winnipeg, and I signed a 1 year contract and thinking, I'd go up there for a year or so and then maybe come back to the NFL.
All right, so how big of an adjustment was it in Canada compared to American football? Because CFL, you got 12 on 12, you got men in motion, just different rule set. Was it a tough adjustment for you?
Well, Mike, I think for any quarterback that's was playing, playing down here in the States, to go up to Canada, initially is an adjustment. There's no doubt about it because of the extra man. Of course, you have an extra man on offense also. But I think more than anything, it's the fast-paced style of CFL football is an adjustment for a quarterback. I really felt like it was, and of course you only had 3 downs, and I felt like you only have 20 seconds to put the ball in play, so you really got to be ready to roll right off the bat, and that's what takes time for a quarterback playing college football down here. Going up there is just to get used to some of those adjustments.
Yeah, and your stats really went up 1978. You got a new head coach. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Well, with Bud, we started off. I became a starter in midway through the '75 season, and I was a full-time starter in '76 and '77, and we were 10-6 both of those years, and just right on the verge of being one of the best teams up there. I think we beat Saskatchewan in '76. We played them, I think, 3 times in the regular season there, and beat them every time that we played them, and they ended up going to the Grey Cup. We lost to Edmonton, I think, 14-12 in the playoffs that year, and Edmonton's great kicker, Dave Cutler, kicked in like a 50-something yard field goal to beat us. And then the next year, in '77, again, we had a really good team. We were 10-6, and then we lost to BC, British Columbia, in the playoff game there in Vancouver. We lost 33-32 in the rain, and then they fired Bud right after that game. And we were really upset. A lot of the players were upset because, you know, we were, you know, on the verge of having a really solid team, a team that was going to, you know, possibly go to the Grey Cup. And then we ended up getting Ray Yock, who was in Edmonton previously, and Ray became the head coach. And I wasn't really thrilled at first when Ray came in because – in Edmonton, Ray played a two quarterback system.
Yeah.
And I told him initially that I, you know, wasn't comfortable and didn't want to, you know, play in that kind of system. I felt like I was good enough to be the starting quarterback and finish the game, you know, not have to be, you know, substituted for. And anyway, Ray told me to give it a chance and then so we'll see what happens. I told him I would. And in 78, I had one of my, you know, the best year that I'd had up to date. And I led the league in attempts and completions and yards and touchdown passes and hit over 60% of my passes, and which was one of the tops in the league. And I missed one game, and we were 9-6. I was 9-6 as a starting quarterback. And I got hurt at the last regular season game in the fourth quarter, and took play in the playoff game. And Winnipeg lost 38-4 to Calgary. And but anyway, Ray coming in, I really revitalized my career as far as utilizing my talent for using the whole field, because he had a outside in passing game where I'd read from the outside in and be able to use because my arm was good enough I could throw the wide field without any problem, and a lot of quarterbacks couldn't do that. So I enjoyed playing in Ray Yock's system, and I credit him with really all the success I had from then on.
Yeah, and you played with some great wide receivers like Joe Poplawski. You want to talk about your teammates a little bit?
Yes, had some outstanding receivers in Winnipeg. Of course, when Bud was there, Tommy Scott, who was a great receiver, ended up going to Edmonton and finishing his career with the Edmonton Eskimos. Tommy was a great receiver, and actually he was the guy that Ray had traded to get Joe Poplawski from Edmonton. And of course Joe came in and had a great rookie season, and then we had another outstanding receiver, the Canadian Rick House, who was just a super talent. And of course had Mike Holmes, was a great wide receiver. Mike was the number one draft choice for the 49ers when he came out, and of course we got him. And he was leading receiver in Canada a couple of years. And then Eugene Goodloe came in 81 and caught 100 passes, set the CFL record at that time in 1981. So I had some great receivers. And then later on, you know, right at the end of my career in Winnipeg, they brought in James Murphy and Jeff Boyd. And so I had some really outstanding receivers to throw to.
Yeah, 1980 and 81, you were named the most outstanding player back-to-back seasons. What do you remember from those seasons, which may have been two of your best?
Well, they were. Again, you know, when Ray came in, and we were on the verge at the time of being a solid Grey Cup contender before we got, you know, before Ray came in to take over. And then when he comes in, of course, he made a lot of changes after the 78 season. 79 was I was hurt. I missed, I think, five or six games. And there were just a lot of turnover as far as player-wise. And so he had to get his the guys he wanted in there, and so we're kind of almost starting over in 1980, but had some outstanding talent and great offensive line, and we ended up again being a really solid team, and we finished 10-6 in 1980. We lost to the Eskimos, and of course at that time, the Eskimos from 78 through I think 82, they won five consecutive Grey Cups.
Yeah,
and we were really and we were really the only team that were challenging them. And so in 80 and then 81, we were 11-5 team, and just really, really close. And that was, I think that was my best year. And we lost to British Columbia in the first round of the playoffs. And, I think everybody thought we were going to, overtake Edmonton at that time. And then the next year, 82, we started off really, really having a great first half of the season. I think we were like 7-1. Then we had some injuries to our wide receivers. I think Holmes and Goodloe got hurt, so we had to, we were constantly trying to find somebody to replace them. So our passing game suffered a little bit because we weren't just didn't have that cohesiveness, with the new receivers that we brought in. And finally kind of got it together, and we ended up going to the Western Final again for the second time against Edmonton in the 80s. And we had we just scored a touchdown, got the lead, and it was in the fourth quarter. Edmonton, we kicked off to Edmonton, and Warren threw an interception. We intercepted him on the right sideline, and they called a roughing penalty on John Helton, I think. And we would have had the ball in great field position, had the momentum going. And when that happened, they ended up getting a first down and went on down and scored late. And they beat us, I think, 24-21. It was, I remember it was a cold, icy field. I think we had, it was tough for Trevor Kennett, our field goal kicker, because the field was so icy. I think we had some opportunities on some field goals that I think there was some ice situation where he slipped a couple times, but that was just tough loss for us there. And when I think that was the time that everybody thought we were gonna finally get the Grey Cup.
All right, so 1983, you were traded to the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Were you ready to make that change?
Not really. I after the 82 season, Ray had ended up going to the Washington Federals as a head coach for the in the USFL. So here I am again. I'm thinking, here we are on the verge of having a championship team, and I'm gonna have to start all over again with a new coach because they end up bringing Cal Murphy in, and. So I held out. I told my, I had signed a 5-year contract, I think, after the 1980 season. And, I told him, I wanted to, I was willing to play that 83 season with Winnipeg, and I was hoping that they would let me have an opportunity to leave after that season to possibly go to the USFL or even the NFL. I was really thinking more USFL at the time, but Paul Robson, he had told myself and Gil Scott, who is my agent, that we would talk during the season if I would come back and try to work something out. And it never really happened. And so I ended up playing. I came back right before the first game of the season in 83, and I didn't play that game. Then I played the next six games. I think we were 5-1, and I'm playing in a new system, and I was having a a pretty solid year. I mean, I was throwing for well over 300 yards in those six games, and we were 5-1. And I would go in every week and ask Paul, are you going to be able to do something to help me, leave after this season? And, of course, they kept putting it off. And after talking with Gil and I guess we decided that maybe I should hold out and force them to do something, and that's exactly what happened. I ended up sitting out after the seventh game of the season, and everybody was pretty, mad at me, and understandably so, and so I ended up coming back to Alabama, coming back to Birmingham, and I think like 4 weeks later, they traded me to Hamilton, and Hamilton agreed to let me out after, not after the 83 season, but after the 84 season, and I wish that I could have stayed in Winnipeg and finished out. I would have stayed. I would have stayed 83 and 84 in Winnipeg if they would have done that. But I think I just forced them to go ahead and do something else.
All right, now 1984, you finally get to the Grey Cup, playing for Hamilton,
yeah.
And it's against Winnipeg. What was that like?
Well, it was strange because we knew that Winnipeg, and I knew that Winnipeg was just solid. I mean, it was their time. I think it was almost our time, and when I was there in 83, Edmonton had won 5 in a row in the Grey Cups, and like I said, I thought we were going to get there in 82. We had to, had that Western Final that we lost 24-21 to them, but 83 were, I didn't really know the offense when I came back, and of course, when I forced them to trade me, there went that opportunity in 83. So, 84, we weren't – I mean, Hamilton, we were had a pretty good defense, but we were nowhere near the caliber team that Winnipeg was. And, of course, that was the year that they won the Grey Cup.
All right, so we talked a little bit about the Rams earlier. I mean, is it something that, looking back, you're glad you did, or is there anything you would have done differently?
Well, if I didn't do it, I would have never had the opportunity to play in the NFL, to show that I could play in the NFL. The thing, when we first started this interview, we talked about, going to the Rams and possibly getting a bad rap. Well, I certainly feel like I had a bad rap with the Rams. I was the third rated passer in the NFC in 85 with the Rams and in the NFL. And if you look at the last 12 games that I played in Los Angeles, I think I was the top rated passer in the NFL those last 12 games, or right there near the top. I might have been number, I think I had over 90, 92 quarterback rating of the last 12 games. I threw 2-1 touchdowns, interceptions. I think I had the highest passing percentage. I was over, I think I was like 64%. And I ended up as a 60% passer with the Rams, and I was third in the league that year. And I feel like I did get a bad rap. I was 11-4 as a starting quarterback. I just wondered what everybody, expected me to do, because I never got the opportunity to throw the ball anywhere near like I did in Canada, that's for sure. But my numbers, if I'd have thrown the ball as much as Marino or Fouts and those guys, I would have been right there with the same stats as they had. Like I said, if I didn't have the opportunity to go down and show that I could play, I'd have probably wondered, could I have done it in the NFL? But then again, doing that and having to leave Winnipeg, I lost opportunities to possibly win 3 or 4 Grey Cups, because I think Winnipeg was right on the verge of doing that. Of course, they won one in 84, but I think there were probably, you know, 83, and from 83 on, you know, they were contenders every year.
So did you ever think about, after leaving the NFL, about going back and playing in the CFL?
Well, here's the thing about that, because when I signed with the Rams in 85, I went out there, learned the offense right before the season, came back, and we had about 6 weeks where I came back to Birmingham before I moved back to L.A., and I was playing a pickup basketball game, and I came down after I took a jump shot, and I felt a little pop in my back, and I went and sat down over on the bleachers, and after about 2 or 3 minutes, I could not move. My back, I don't know what, I think I ruptured a disc in my back, and I kept thinking that it would go away, and here it was a week before I'm training camp, and I'm moving out to L.A., and I'm still hurting, and I didn't know what to do. I didn't tell the Rams that I did, because I just signed a 4-year contract, and I'm expected to be the starting quarterback, and here I am with a ruptured disc in my back. So when I finally go over there right before, you know, the training camp, and I can't practice the first week because of my back, so I'm getting injections and all kind of treatment. And I'm hurting after every practice. I come in, and my back is just killing me. This went on all throughout the season, so I'm having the back problems. Then I had a kidney stone operation after 8 games in the midway through the 85 season. So I missed one game. I missed the game against the New York Giants. So that's the only game I missed, and I had all these problems in 85, and yet we're still winning, and I'm having a good year, I think. And then we go, and then we beat the Cowboys. Dickerson has a great game, and then we lose to the Bears. And so I'm getting a bad rap for that. And it's a two-edged sword. In some ways, I wish I'd have stayed in Winnipeg and got some Grey Cups. And then the other time I look around and say, well, if I'd have done that, I would think, well, could I have done it in the NFL? Well, you know, I did it, but I couldn't play anymore after I'd hurt my back, and it kept on. After the 85 season, I came back, and I tried to go in 86, and actually I played in the first preseason game, and then I got my I got hit on my knee and had to have arthroscopic surgery and missed the first 4 games of the season of 86. And when I came back, my back started bothering me real bad again. So I was done, really.
All right. 1995, you got the highest honor anybody can get that plays in the CFL. You were put in the Hall of Fame. I mean, you want to tell us a little bit what that was like, what your feelings were about it?
Well, I was coaching at Hamilton in 95, so I was up there, during that time when I was inducted. So there was a lot of energy being put into coaching, but it was a great honor to be inducted into the CFL Hall of Fame. There's a lot of great players that are – you know, that are in that league up there, and to be inducted into the Hall of Fame is certainly quite an honor.
All right, so you mentioned a little bit about coaching. I know you've also coached a little bit of high school football. What are you doing nowadays?
Well, I got out of coaching because my wife started having some seizures, and so we decided to – I had coached for 18 years after I – left Los Angeles, and so I got out of it, and we decided to move back to Birmingham because I was bouncing around, you know, a lot of different places, colleges. Coached 3 years in the CFL, Tried to get out of coaching and move back to Birmingham and get our kids settled and let them stay in one place for a while. So we ended up just staying here in Birmingham, and I just kind of, you know, spend my time with my wife.
So you still follow the CFL?
I certainly do. Matter of fact, I watched Hamilton in Toronto last night and
Hamilton
looked forward
looked
to
good
what
last night too.
They did. They looked really good. Of course, the Bombers play tonight against Montreal, so I'll be watching that. I definitely follow the CFL and enjoy watching the Bombers all the time. I enjoy watching them play. Of course, I'll follow the other games also.
All right. So I just wanted to thank you, Dieter, for coming on the show. It was an honor to have you on.
Thank you so much, Mike. I appreciate being with you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Dieter.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye. All right, guys. Remember to follow us on thegruelingtruth.net. You can follow us on iHeart, iTunes, TuneIn, Spreaker, Stitcher, everywhere you find sports podcasts. You'll find The Grueling Truth. You can follow us on Twitter, @GruelingTruth. And don't forget, next week we have a huge week of guests. Our NFL Legends show will feature former Cincinnati Bengals linebacker Reggie Williams, probably the greatest linebacker in Bengals history. We will also have former Bengals defensive lineman Jim Scowl start at defensive tackle on the Super Bowl 23 team. Plus, keep an eye out because we have two major announcements coming up in the next week for guests that we're going to have on. Also, as we talked about the CFL, we'll have the first CFL Pick'em show for week two next week with myself, Coach Brian Schmidt, and former CFL four-time Grey Cup winner Robert Drummond, who is one of the top running backs in CFL history. So make sure you check that out. And then we've got the Rouge, White, and Blue show with Oz Davis. So make sure you check out all of those. And then, of course, as always, our main sponsor, Gridiron Mo. We'll have the Super Bowl trivia show with Gridiron Mo. So, for Dieter Brock, I'm Mike Goodpaster. You've been listening to The Grueling Truth, where the legends speak.